the winning sound of Network Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Mason and Guests, heard on the Voice of Barbados 92.9. I'm Dr. Andrew Ford, once again filling in for Andrew Mason, who is probably relaxing in St. Kitts, a day off during the Colonial Medical Insurance Super 50 Cup. We invite you to call us at 434-17. No Jockeys Challenge Race will occur this Saturday, November the 23rd, and the post time will be at 1:15 p.m. We invite all the race fans to go out and have a look at that race. It should be a great time. But here we go on to the cricket. A lot's been happening. We have our West Indian men in Afghanistan, our West Indian women in the West Indies, and our premier 50-over competition, the Super 50 Cup, the Colonial Medical Insurance Super 50 Cup, going on. Lots of other things have been happening as well, but we want to focus initially on the West Indies in Afghanistan. We started off with a really good tour. We won the three ODIs and everyone was cock-a-hoop. Then we won the first T20, and again, we expected that we would have a walkover, but Afghanistan is eighth in the T20 rankings, and West Indies happens to be at 10th, and certainly the latter two T20 matches, the West Indies were quite outplayed, and I guess the rankings have spoken for themselves. In 2017, the West Indies had beaten Afghanistan in the West Indies 3-0, and this recent loss of ours has put Afghanistan ahead in the head-to-head series. I think we've had 7 and they've won about 4, but you know, this does happen. We are disappointed, but some bright sparks during the T20 series. We had Evan Lewis, who's now in the top 10 in the T20 rankings. Also, we had Shea Hope having one appearance and making that count with a 50. The bowling has been quite good. We've had Keswick Williams and Cottrell Holder. Walsh has had a kind of a difficult entry, but all in all, even though we haven't played well and we have a lot of improvement to make, you know, we've got a chance to see what some of our young T20 stars have been able to do, and you know, going up a different level now. We've seen Brandon King struggle, and basically the batsmen have struggled a great deal during this series. And, you know, that's been something that's been a recurring decimal in West Indies cricket. We do have some batting difficulties and many batting failures and collapses. But this is something that we hope to rectify now that we have the coach of our choice, born and bred in the West Indies under Phil Simmons. And also we have arguably our most accomplished T20 player as captain, Kieran Pollard. Pedro Graves is in the studio with me once again, and Pedro is a cricketer of some repute, and you know, it's good to have you here tonight, Pedro.
Good evening, Andrew, and good evening to all our listeners around the region.
All right, so Pedro, what are your thoughts on the recent T20 series that the West Indies have played in Afghanistan?
Yes, coming out of the 50 over win, winning 3-0. You felt like the momentum would have been with the West Indies, and certainly so when they won the first T20. But then Afghanistan bounced back and they would have won the last two, then taking the series. As you said, there were some bright sparks nevertheless in Evan Lewis, Cotterill, Keswick Williams getting the most wickets. But the worrying concern would have been obviously the batting, as you mentioned, with none of the other batters, with Shea Hope obviously coming into that game, got in a half century, the last game, but the decider. But at the end of the day, I felt there were too many dot balls. I felt that we did not have a real plan for Rahman, who's been bowling well with the new ball and everything. I don't think we had a clear plan for the spinners, Nabi, et cetera, and also Rashid Khan, who's found some form back again. So we have now to probably look at and see what is happening, why we can't rotate this right as much as possible. And it's something that has been going on in the West Indies for a long time, not just this current side, but when you go back years, decades, we find that we always had this high percentage of dot balls, and we kind of made up in the back end by the brute power of some of our players. But we have to really look at, you know, the rotation of strike. We really have to see where we went wrong. And it's not to say that, yes, you didn't, you know, everyone wants to win. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we give these youngsters like Brandon King and Rutherford a chance to really show what they're worth, because they believe that, you know, once we give them as much outing as possible, we can actually have a strong team leading into probably say the New World Cup.
Well, it's pretty interesting. The batting lineup did fluctuate somewhat. Lewis was fixed, and we had some shuffling with King in, at one stage, and then we also tried, you know, shifted with the openers. Hetmeyer moved up and down. Rutherford alternated and switched, but in the long run, the top six didn't really perform, and then the all-rounders, we didn't really get much from the captain except for the 32 that he made in the first match when we won, and also Holder didn't make the runs that we expected. So, I mean, we didn't have that late order push that we'd had when we won the two World Cups previously, but we still have quite a few months to go before trying to defend our T20 title, and a lot of work for Cricket West Indies and the senior team to do. And to discuss that more, we have a special guest, Mr. Ian Bradshaw, who is former West Indies all-rounder and really one of our cricket analysts on the show. We're really glad to have you here, Ian.
Good night to you, Dr. Ford, and as usual, good night to all of your listeners.
Yes, Ian, I know that you would have been paying some interest to the recent T20 series that's been going on. What's the problem with our batting?
Well, if you don't mind, let's just take one step back and just look at the series just before that and understand how it led into the T20. And I think that we would have been encouraged by our performances in the one days in terms of being able to execute a series win. And that was a team, I would say, very much in transition coming out of the World Cup of this year. And I thought that the Ross Chasers and so forth did exceptionally well. And I guess it argued well for a strong T20 series, because we would have fancied ourselves playing against Afghanistan. But as we know, the shorter the game, it more gives what I consider the weaker team more of an advantage. And I think that you saw that in the T20, where a team like Afghanistan, who might not consistently post a big 50 over score, are good enough to put a competitive score on the table, and they do have a very talented T20 bowling lineup. So I think that we were found out a little bit in the T20 format. It is a little bit concerning, because we are hoping to build momentum going into that T20 World Cup next year, and I'm sure that it would dent our confidence. I don't think that it's needed for us to press any panic button or anything like that. But it certainly was a reality check where our T20 game is. You look at from a batting perspective, we're still trying to gather that explosiveness at the top. We're probably shortchanging ourselves from a batting perspective in that first power play. And then in the middle, we're trying to get more of a turnover rate in terms of less dot balls and so forth in the middle, and I think that these are some areas that we'll have to work on from a batting perspective. You go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we really look at a T20 standard, maybe 30 runs would be reasonable, and anything over that would be going towards a form of excellence. And in the batting, we only had Evan Lewis passing 100. He got 106 in his three innings. We mentioned Holt with 52 in his one innings. Ramdin, 44 in his two. And Pollard just 50 in his three innings. The next highest was Hetmeyer. So it's a really, you know, not a very auspicious attempt at batting by our team at all.
No, we will not be able to play the same type of T20 game that won us the last two T20s for two reasons. We had some exceptional hitters in the two series in the past, and that allowed us to compensate for the high number of dot balls, which traditionally West Indian teams have been known for. We are not going to be blessed with that level of power hitting consistently, and so we must be far more efficient from a batting perspective in getting those and getting that strike rotated and so forth.
What about the mix of batsmen versus hitters? I mean, we do expect that Russell will be fit sometime by the time we are trying to defend our title. Sammy is probably not going to be back, but you know, Puran is missing from this series due to circumstances which we discussed last week. But we do see the difference it makes not having him there. But Hope, being one of the few really technical batsmen that we have, he flourished in just one short exposure to the crease. But you know, we don't want him to play every single match for Cricket West Indies like maybe Holder seems to be doing. But do you think we need to consider a mix of batsmen versus better strikers of the ball?
Well, the evolution of T20 bowling is forcing batsmen to be more efficient. Bowlers have worked out that you must have more weapons and more variety to make yourself less predictable. And there's so many strategies that guys are employing now, the different types of slower balls, the different angles they're using, both from over and around the wicket. And that was so well demonstrated when Gurney played for the Tridents, his ability to change angles and create different opportunities to reduce the batters being able to be too predictable and to dictate the areas of the ground that they will be hitting. So I don't think that the good T20 teams that you see playing internationally now rely on just clearing the ropes. They make sure that they maximize as many dot balls as a limited amount of dot balls. And we have to be far more efficient where that is concerned. Yes, we may be blessed with a Pollard. Puran is progressing and so forth. But it's going to be important that in the first six, we find a combination that can be consistently explosive. And then in that 7 to 16 over range, we must be able to manipulate the field far, far better and have guys that are more adaptable in different situations, where that our batting lineup in itself doesn't become too predictable in the way that we send it. We must be able to have players to come in to adapt to a particular type of bowling and to adapt to a particular type of surface. When you go to Australia, you're going to come against some very, very good surfaces. So it's going to be important that we have persons that can adapt to the bouncing ball and so forth. And on those far bigger outfields, you don't want to be just backing yourself to hit the ball out the park.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the other side of the ball with the bowling, Keswick Williams showed that variety you mentioned, that Gurney showed, and he had a pretty good series, 8 wickets, 71 runs at an economy rate of 5.91. Pierre only had one appearance with 3 overs. Can't really comment on that. But Jason Holder and Paul especially and Cottrell, they did quite well.
Our bowling held its own. I think that the surfaces were not always totally batter friendly, and it did give the bowling team a bit of opportunity to vary the pace and so forth. I think what we must find out is some more wicket taking options. We had looked before at O'Shane Thomas when he played. He did quite well in the CPL 2 years ago. And it's going to be important that we identify one or two wicket-taking options, especially if someone like a Narine continues not to be fit. It's going to be difficult to just go into T20 and rely on just trying your best to limit teams. You must have a bowler or two that can be a point of difference and be able to pick up a crucial wicket or two for you. So that is something that I guess as a bowling unit we will have to look at. But I am quite pleased, as you said, that you have being able to expose some new players. Pierre building up a set of games now and getting accustomed to the international arena, that's very important. And you mentioned Keswick. He's played a little bit now, been around West Indies cricket, played in a number of the tournaments around the world. So he's another one that is being groomed for the T20 World Cup. And it's going to be important that we find the right blend, because as I said, the T20 game is moving where you have to be very, very, very flexible. You cannot be too predictable. And it's going to be important that we have as many options for Captain Pollard to utilize on the day.
Yes. Good night, Ian. Pedro Gray is there. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Pedro. Good to hear you.
Now, you mentioned the bowlers that you want to get the wickets, and I agree with you. And probably, as Andrew also said, we didn't get a good start from Hayden Walsh. He held his own somewhat, but he's one of those guys that you would look to probably get wickets for you in T20 format, along with Kerry Pierre, in the absence of a Sunil Narain. But the question I have for you is, do you think that, considering how good, because we must admit that the Afghanistan bowlers, especially Rahman and Nabi, they bowl really well in those conditions. Did we play horses for courses? Should we have included, I know he wasn't part of the original T20 setup, but with Puran missing out, should we have opted to bring in Shea Hope? Because again, we look back at 50 over, you had Shea Hope, Rustin Chase, and Puran being the persons who dominated the batting. And if you look at the Afghanistan side, they didn't change too much their squad from the ODI to T20.
Well, I could appreciate that the West Indies, cricket West Indies, not trying to ask Shea to play all the games. And it's useful that you realize that his adaptability, being moving from the top of the order to coming down in the middle and still find a way to score, that shows that there's a cricketing intelligence of Shea Hope. And I think he'll be a key player for us as we move forward into the T20 World Cup. I do not believe that Ramdin will be in that squad, and simply because with Shea and Puran available, that should solve your keeping options. Where Ralston is concerned, obviously he was a revelation in the 50 over, particularly his bowling, which I thought was outstanding. Has he played enough T20 cricket, or been exposed enough to T20 that he should have played? I'm not sure as yet, and I believe that we may see him get more opportunities if his white ball performances continue to be strong. But because we don't play a lot of international T20 tournaments, it's going to be important that Cricket West Indies give opportunities or try to channel as many players as possible into some of these global leagues and pick up some experience so that they can be battle ready when the time comes. I think that's going to be critical for us, and then gives the selectors some range of options as we move forward.
Mm. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Ramdin and a position in the T20 team, because looking at the statistics from his 70 T20s, his average is 18.38 at a strike rate of 114. However, if you consider the other options for wicketkeeper, even though he might be a better glove man, in his short career, Hope, as well as even Johnson Charles, who isn't as good a keeper, and certainly Puran, they average in the low 20s, which is, I mean, between 15-20% more per innings than Ramdin. And I think over such a long sample of 70 matches, I think we see what Ramdin can give. And, you know, in a match that we were going to lose, I think that his innings was paced at a rate that, you know, was just going to be another non-impactful not-out innings. And, you know, it wasn't, for someone coming in at 4 or 6, it wasn't the type of gear changes that you would expect to try to alter the course of an inevitable loss. So I think that the other wicket-keeping options that Cricket West Indies have at their disposal does beg the question, should a guy who is averaging 15% less than the other options really play after having 70 matches? What are your views on that?
Well, as I said before, I do not believe that Rambin will go to the T20 World Cup unless something happens to the two guys I fight in terms of Shea Hope and Nicholas Puran. I think that when you're looking at the World Cup squad, it'll be difficult for Rambin once those two guys are fit to get into the squad. So I'm not going to spend too much time arguing whether he should have gone now or not, because I don't see him featuring that much as we go forward. What I do believe that we have to look at is the role that a Rambin might have played when we were successful, and ensuring that we prepare guys for that. We remember that Rambin was one who was asked to bat amongst the hitters and be as effective as possible and to hold it in it together. So it's going to be critical that the Shea Hopes, who I think is a wonderful, intelligent cricket person, I think his role in guiding us to victories will be important, because you have hopefully the benefit of someone like Andre Russell. We know that Jason can be quite effective. Puran, Hetmeyer is not right now a bit of a concern, but I think we must invest in this young man. And if we can have that middle order collectively putting runs on the board, I think we will be very, very competitive in the T20 World Cup.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank you, Ian, for coming on the show and giving us your opinions about the West Indies versus Afghanistan tour. Yeah, well, we got to ventilate a little bit about the T20 series thus far and about our batting woes. And I'm sure that, you know, the guys do try their best, but sometimes it just doesn't work out. But now we have on the show one of our great cricketers of the past, wicketkeeper batsman Derek Murray. Derek, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yes. I must say that I was given an incorrect number, so I was unable to get in touch with you earlier, but I'm glad that we finally stopped bothering that person who said that they get calls from on your behalf so often.
I hope they give more succinct answers than I will.
Well, they were very brief, that much I can tell you. So Derek, you're still an avid cricket fan and involved in the game, and of course you care about our senior team and how they're going in Afghanistan. I'm sure you were pleased with the 50-over victory that transpired just over a week ago.
I was. I am still a great fan of West Indies cricket, and I am the eternal optimist that looks forward to us being in the top three in the not too distant future. Even though I'm aware that there's a long way to go, but beating Afghanistan is a step up the ladder, so it's been good news, certainly from the 50-over game point of view.
Well, we certainly have to defeat whoever they put in front of us, and that's the job of the senior team. 2 years ago, we were able to beat Afghanistan in our backyard, but now in spin-friendly conditions and with a transitional team that may not represent the final squad for our T20 defense, we fell short. What are your major concerns about the performance of the T20 squad?
I think it was very disappointing, particularly when the confidence would have been high after the 50-over games, and you know, it really didn't augur well for the general well-being of West Indies cricket, because it's not just that we lost, but how we looked in losing, and it just shows that there's a long way to go. In terms of, as you say, getting team selection right, having the right players in the team at the right time when they inform and when they're doing well, And looking at the conditions that we're going to meet. So again, it just shows that there's still a long way to go, and we can't just openly say, yep, we, you know, there's a place of better days to come. You know, there's going to be a lot of hard work, a lot of soul searching. I think one of the things that we've got to be is very honest with ourselves and not be carried away by numerous cameo performances from players at times and think that that's going to be the real thing. I think we really need to be very serious about how we choose players, how we identify players who are going to represent the West East at the highest level, and certainly when you're coming to these international tournaments.
Well, you can't fault the logic for promoting Brandon King and Hayden Walsh to senior duty after the CPL that they had. But what a learning curve for the two of them.
But again, I think we have to be a little more discerning that, you know, these performances in one CPL tournament, which we also have to face the fact that not all the teams have all the top players playing in them regularly. And therefore, you need to be able to look through cameo performances and say, look, is this the real article? Is this the real thing? Is this the way to develop our players? You know, to look at the CPL, you're carried away by a few big shots and whatnot. And you think, yep, just put them in and they will perform. And that doesn't happen at the top level. We've got to look around and identify our own best players first and foremost. Look around the rest of the world and see who are the really best performers. And when you look at it and you choose out the best players in the world, whether it's T20, whatever, they are the best players in any format of cricket. So you look at the batsmen, Kohli, Smith, Root. They are all good players in any format of cricket. You look back to the previous generation, Hashim Amla, you know, Ponting, Yogora, and they are going to make runs in Test cricket. They're going to make runs in T20. We need to look at our players and say, oh, not just because he's come and hit 30 or 20 balls means that he's an international class cricketer. And they got to be able to do that for me regularly in different formats of the game for me to say they're going to represent me in the highest competition, the World Cup, the World T20, whatever you call it. You know, you're not going to win with cameo performances for a couple of overs or so.
Okay, well, we have a new captain now, Pollard, who's very adept at this format. He averages 25 over his career, averaged 25 in this series, and also had a small contribution with the ball. Tell us about your belief regarding the choice of Pollard and what effect you think the responsibility of being captain will have on his, you know, his tapestry of work thus far. Will he get better, or will the stress be too much for him?
Well, I hope he will get better. He's now mature. He's into his 30s. So he's done it over the years at this level of cricket, particularly in the T20 format. Less so in the 50 over, but again, he's got an equally good record. I think what he brings to the job is the credibility with the other players that, yep, he has done it. He's very competitive. He's won CPLs, IPLs, Big Bash tournaments, etc. So I believe that the players will respond to his example, and he's brilliant in the field as well, which is very important in the shorter format. So I think that he will bring something to the game that says, you know, we need to be more competitive. But I also think that we need to see the test player, the test captain, Jason Holder, doing more in terms of his own role in the T20 and the 50-over game, because it's not going to be one man leading and the rest looking on to see what's going to happen. But everybody has got to pitch in and do their little bit. And really, you know, we need to have the kind of leadership from Pollard, Holder, Simmons, and the rest of the team to really mold the West Indies into a cohesive unit. And, you know, there's too much talk in the periphery about the players going to showcase themselves. Showcase for what? To get a contract in the Big Bash or in the Bangladesh Premier League or whatever? No. This is about building yourself, developing into top-class international cricketers that can win world events.
Yeah, it's interesting your comment about Jason. He has a very fledgling T20 career. He's only played about 13 games compared to Pollard's 70-odd. And after probably a breakthrough season of sorts with the ball, he performed quite well in the series. Let's see. Holder, just from three matches, 78 runs, 3 wickets, and his economy rate 6.5. But yes, he could have made more with the ball. But certainly I would say that most of the all-rounders only performed on one side of the ball. And that's one of the difficulties that we have with the T20 squad that is there. But if we were to even ponder some of our best all-rounders that we much vaunted all-rounders of the past, I mentioned that Pollard averages 25 and maybe an economy rate of 8.2 with the ball. Dwayne Bravo averages 25 as well, an economy rate in the eights, even though he has more wickets. Brathwaite, probably the weakest of them with the bat, but stronger with the ball, economy rate-wise. Sammy, also a similar difficulty, averaging under 20 and economy rate over 7. So Russell is the only one that averages a little more with the bat, with 27. But his economy rate is the highest because he's a strike bowler. So we don't have any dominating all-rounders in the T20 format, even though we do speak of them with great joy because of our two victories in the past. But I do have Pedro Graves here who'd like to answer your question.
Hi, good night, Derek.
Hi, Pedro.
What is the mood in Trinidad? We all know we have to support Young Puran, but what is the mood in Trinidad now with regards to this offense that he's been brought against him?
Great disappointment that any player, any young player should want to get involved in acts that will go to the detriment of the reputation of West Indies cricket. Forget whether we winning and we're on top or we down at the bottom of the rankings. We have established a reputation for fair play throughout the years, when we were at our best, when we were at our worst, whatever. And to have that reputation tarnished is very, very difficult to accept. And while we may want to be youth and a silly act, etc., which, yes, we know him, he's not known as a cheat, but he will be labeled as such internationally for some time to come. And that's a burden we're going to have to carry. So we're very disappointed, and we would like to see more done in terms of mentorship for these young players, for them to recognize that it's not just a question of making a few runs or taking a few catches, but they have a reputation to uphold, and they are the ambassadors for West Indies cricket.
Well, immediately it brings back to mind the Australian scenario with Bancroft, and then the Cricket Australia then actually did a one internal investigation, and it was revealed that some senior players in David Warner and Steve Smith were also involved, and they actually took to ban them as well. Do you think that Cricket West Indies should also go that route too and see if there were any senior players involved in such?
Well, not only senior players, but West Indies cricket should do its own investigation and decide whether any further punishment is needed to be meted out. The ICC have their schedule of bans and sanctions for players caught doing whatever they do. But I think the West Indies, just like Australia were some time ago, in the position where they can take further action under the West Indies Code of Conduct and what we need to uphold and determine whether there is any further need for action. I'm not in a position to stay here in my armchair and watch a couple of videos and say, oh, that's terrible. You know, there's something behind it, and therefore that should be investigated, and if further action is needed, then take it. We must not be scared of showing discipline to our players, whether or not they fall within the ambit of the ICC's own lax or not so lax regulation.
Yeah, well, Derek, we do have a reputation for playing the sport in a gentlemanly way. But what's so puzzling is that a guy who is predominantly a wicketkeeper and spends a lot of time doing that, as well as being in the field, the gestures we saw in the video, the rubbing and then alternating with the seam manipulation, it was such an odd combination of movements. I'm quite puzzled as to what would have really possessed him or caused him to do such a thing in the modern age. And also, what was his, you know, what was the rationale? What was the impetus, the stimulus for such a spontaneous action? You know, have you known of people having that type of, you know, inclination on the field?
Well, there seem to be some people that will do things like that, and I'm not branding any nationality.
Speaking generally,
or any
of course.
Types,
yeah.
Of people, just generally. They're the odd player that would do something just because they think it might be a good idea or whatever. But in this day and age, where if you spit, six or seven cameras pick it up,